The nice thing about following Jim is that, you know, part of what this study here that we looked at was taking those numbers that he did out of that, and we didn't break it down to the various treatments, but basically looking at each of those irrigation levels that he had and how much irrigation they put, and then putting some numbers to it, and along with some other farms, and then as part of another project that I'm involved in, Texas Alliance for Water Conservation. It's in Floyd and Hale counties. The cooperators we had there, all of our irrigated farms that we had in that project also went into our kind of our group of data that you'll see that present as to what paid and what didn't pay. That part of it is just for during the drought of 2011, and then we'll review a little bit of information about 2012. And then we will maybe draw a few conclusions about that. So, again, it ties really well with what Jim just presented. So you got all that background of all that work they did into how they came up with those yields, and then we'll put some numbers to that. Also, looking at some different investment alternatives as far as developing better irrigation and whether or not that pays off at the current price levels. And we did a stochastic analysis there using our farm assistance model that I use, which is developed by the Ag Food Policy Center. And if anybody's familiar with the work they do with baseline and farm projections, and representative farms, it's the same model that we do at a firm level basis. So that's what we did with that as well. Okay, so this fits right in. I'm not going to go over this real in a lot of detail, but it's the exact same thing that Jim already said. Our situation on the Texas Southern High Plains, we've got declining capacity, increased efficiency of these newer systems, the LEPA, the drip systems, increasing energy costs is always an issue, and then we've also got varieties with higher potential yields. That was pretty evident when I was looking at some research for another presentation. I was looking at some yield data from the 50s in response to irrigation rotation, and I realized how much more we're yielding now off the same amount of water. This is actually a slide I presented at 2006 Beltwide, so things haven't changed since then. At that conference, we used the same modeling technique to look at some different alternatives then of what we're calling, when I say fully irrigated 120-acre pivot. In other words, we have a 300-gallon-a-minute pivot. If you remember what Jim was saying about capacity there, 300-gallon-a-minute is fairly low capacity. It won't deliver that 0.2 inch a day that he had on some of those slides. So this is low water pivot on 120 acres. So, you know, what if we cut that in half and in essence, double our irrigation capacity for the half that we're going to stay with. Same way, we cut it to 2/3, increasing the capacity as far as inches per acre. Treat the rest as dryland cotton. All these are just cotton. And then we looked at some where we looked at wheat for grain and wheat for grazing. When I did this study in 2006 and I went out on the road and presented this, I got presented with the challenges of following wheat with cotton everywhere, and it's true. Logistically, if we have any weather at harvest, it becomes almost impossible to do a decent job there. So, you know, that becomes a restraint. At that time, we had pretty low grain prices, and we really didn't look too hard at the sorghum alternative. On the other half is dry land. It's still on the dry land side kind of an iffy thing on the sorghum if we're not going to irrigate it. And so, you know, we really didn't include that back then at that time. Our conclusions then was that the least favorable was fully irrigating half. So in other words, basically, kind of goes with what Jim said, we got it to the point where we're over-irrigating then, and we weren't getting the bang for the buck. If you noticed on that high slide that he had, that last inch of water only gave us 11 pounds, so at like 70 cents, that's worth $7.70. You know, we usually figure, well, it's less than that because you got to harvest it. With cottonseed prices where they are today, cottonseed kind of pays for all the ginning plus probably most of the stripping. So you could say it's worth maybe about $7. Well, if your water costs $11, it really didn't pay for that last inch of water on that high that he was showing. So that's kind of what we get here when we cut it all the way in half. We actually get to a point where we get a diminishing return. So our most favorable irrigation technique was doing something that was equivalent to about 75% ET replacement on 2/3 of each pivot. So actually got a more bang. So the question is now, with a different price structure for inputs and for the crops that we're growing, is this still the case? So we updated those results to current cost, price, and yield scenarios from 2006. Now, the yields haven't changed that much from 06, but we are on a slight uptrend, so we did go up a little bit on yields, I think. Went in and interviewed area farmers, collected data from our research. When it says research and extension projects, we're talking about Jim's work there, as well as the information we got from the TAWC project. We decided, because of the logistical problems that I already talked about, of planting a rotation with wheat and cotton on an annual basis, just to look at all cotton alternatives. Basically, irrigated cotton, dryland cotton. So one thing we did with dropping out those wheat alternatives, we decided, and especially at the time we were doing this work, is our well drillers were working day and night drilling new wells everywhere. And so we wanted to look at, well, is that show to pay off? Because that's what was happening. Matter of fact, at the time we were doing this, I actually had my name on the schedule to have a new well drilled on our farm as well. And so I thought, well, we ought to analyze this and see if that's paying off. So what we looked at was the alternative of adding, 4 to 8 new wells, because really it depends on where you are. Where we are near shallow water, a new well is only about $20,000 because they're only going to produce about 60 gallons a minute. You're only going to drill them about 180 feet deep and hit red bed, and that's it. So that's not a very expensive well to drill. In other areas, you can drill a bigger well. It's more expensive, but you're going to get more water out of it. So just kind of on the average, looking at a cost here of about $160,000 spent on new wells. So that's either 4 bigger wells or 8 smaller wells. To bring your capacity back up to 5 gallon a minute capacity, down from that 2 3/4 gallon capacity that we saw in that 300 GPM on 125 acre pivot. The other thing that we did different than last year is drop the USDA direct payments out of the model completely. I know we got a farm bill extension that says we're going to have them now, but if you listen to the talk this morning about policy, who knows what we're going to have by October when those payments are supposed to be paid. So we decided not to let that jade our result. We just dropped it out completely and didn't even look at it. Okay, so what are the results in the prior study? Baseline, trying to scatter the water out, about a 300% increase in real net worth over a 10-year period. That drops to 214% given our new baseline price. This is the August FAPRI baseline price that we used, and then dropping out direct payments. So those two things serve to get us down. I mean, that's still a 200% increase in real net worth over 10 years, about 20% a year. That's probably a better return on investment than you're getting in the stock market. So that's not bad. It's just, even though it's the worst alternative here, it's not necessarily a bad thing. Alternative one, water half the pivots, plant the rest to dryland cotton. We jumped that up then to 256%. Alternative two, water 2/3, 239%. So really, the half, because of the price structure, then with a little bit higher prices than we used back in 2006, it's actually paying. We're right at that margin where that extra inch pays. Probably our model is not matching exactly the data that Jim showed there with the HHH. You know, it'd be kind of more like the medium high, kind of a model, but with more water. And so the more water does pay on that half circle. And again, the one thing that we do about doing a half circle of irrigated cotton, a half circle of dryland cotton, is if we get into one of those wet years where all we got to do is supplement it, you know, there's nothing stopping that pivot from going all the way around in early August if that was the only water we needed. And that's part of what makes that whole monoculture, stay to be the more profitable thing. But then we jump down here, and then this is my controversial number and alternative. So if we go out and invest in more capacity, again, not everybody has the ability to invest in more capacity. You know, we already have a well spacing requirement. This would not violate the water restriction requirement, but if a guy already has as many wells as he can have, this is really not an option to him. But what we showed was spending that extra $160,000 to drill those new wells actually bumped us up to doubling our real net worth over the course of 10 years. So, you know, going ahead and maxing out the capacity on every acre you can, you already have the physical capacity of the pivot. Rather than only turn it halfway around, if there's any way we can go out there and redevelop the water back up to what is the, you know, the design capacity basically of the pivot, that actually has the best payoff. Does anybody else switch to a tablet for most of their work and they reach for the screen now to flip their slides? It's just me? All right. I do it all the time. I just don't even use a mouse anymore. Okay. So, get a little more quickly through this other because we're already kind of talking about what all these are. When it looks at net farm profit, same thing, $132,000 a year for the base. $157,000 for the half pivots, $147,000, $256,000, basically double the profit by going ahead and building that capacity back up. Kind of a risk factor that we look at is the probability of having a cash shortfall at the end of the year. In other words, you don't have enough money to pay out. What does that look like? Well, just going out there and spreading the water around thinly across the whole thing, 23% chance any given year or for the whole period that you're going to be short and have to refinance your operating loan. We dropped that to only 10.9% by increasing that capacity. Now remember, we're increasing our debt load, so you'd think that would increase our risk. Because in the model, we're actually borrowing about 75% of the cost of that system, you know, the drilling those new wells to put in. So we have increased our debt load, but we've increased our profit enough to service that debt load and not put us at a higher risk. And you see here, too, we also have the next lowest risk then is water in the half pivots, making a good strong yield on that half. Ending cash reserves is just it's the money that we have in our modeling that's left over that doesn't have a name yet. And so it's the money that could be invested in future land acquisitions or any type of upgrades to capacity, you know, whatever that is. And the number itself, because we do a 10-year model going out, I probably shouldn't say this about my own program, but to me it's kind of a pointless number. But when you're comparing alternatives, it's a fairly valuable comparison. You know, to really believe that at the end of 2022, if we go out and drill these extra wells and increase our capacity, I'm going to have an extra $1.5 million of cash sitting around. You see how absurd that is. I mean, you're going to have found somewhere to spend that money before that 10 years is up. So what I do, though, is it's really good when we're comparing things to see how it does. And in this case, again, we're all more than double the ending cash than what we are in just trying to scatter that water around across the entire circle as opposed to either concentrating the water or trying to get our capacity back. And this slide is a little bit busy, but it's projected variability in net farm income. The thing that I want to point out here, most important part of this is when we look at these alternatives, here's the zero line, And the gray area represents where 50% of our projected values out of our analysis that basically runs 100 times each year comes up with the average, which is the purple line, and then 50% of all the results fall within the gray area. So what I always like to do when I work with my farmers individually is point out the zero line and how much of their gray area is below the zero line. And you'll see in the base, there's a fairly significant chunk below the zero line. Alternative one, same thing. Alternative two, that's the half pivot, the two-thirds pivot. When we go out here and invest the extra money to get our pivot back to its kind of design capacity, we basically put the bottom of our range on the zero line. So it's pretty much taken us from having a pretty significant risk of an operating loss to just a pretty significant risk of having a break-even year. So again, another factor showing lower risk. All right, at least that one didn't go white on white there. You know, it kind of brings us then when you start talking about in our part of the world pumping more water to make more money. It reminds me of the Mark Twain quote, "Whiskey's for drinking, water's for fighting over." So, so some other observations that kind of build. I was careful not to repeat what Jim Murray said here, but in 2011, that reference ET he was talking about showed the graph of reference ET. In 2011, what I consider the irrigation season, 415 to 915, 46 inches of reference ET that was sucked out by the heat and the wind. 2.36 inches of rainfall to replenish that from. So, you know, that leaves us about 43 inches short of what got sucked out of the ground. 98 days of 95 degrees or more, 58 days of 100 degrees or more. Now, these are not the official Lubbock records. These are the Mesonet site that we run our stuff off of. But the official record for Lubbock was 48 days of over 100. The old record was 29 days in 1934. So we broke it big time. Three bale cotton in 2011 took anywhere from 21 to 35 acre inches with capacity, pivot and drip capacities of 4 to 5 gallon a minute per acre. Well irrigated pivots and drip did have significantly higher net returns. So, you know, it did prove out what we modeled did happen in 2011. So 2012 really wasn't a lot better. You know, we all say, well, at least it's not as bad as it was last year. And that's true. You can look at the numbers, and it wasn't. But last year, had it not been for 2011, would have been one of our worst years ever. So 41 inches of reference CT in that same time period. So instead of 46, 41. We're only 5 inches better. Only 6.25 inches of rainfall instead of 2.75. So we got 4 more inches of rain to go against that 41 inches. So we're still 35 inches short. 69 days of 95 degrees, 25 days of 100 degrees. The official Lubbock record prior to 2011 was 29-1934. I already said that. But 24 days was the official Lubbock record, the official Lubbock days of 100. That tied for the fifth most with 1924. If we had had one more day, it would have been the fourth hottest summer in history in 100 years. So last year was still bad. Again, our three bale cotton only took slightly less irrigation, and part of the reason it took slightly less was just kind of what we learned in 2011 about not wasting a lot of water on the front end. Most of the water that didn't get put on the front end. And so then we... Again, same thing, the well-irrigated pivots and drip had significantly higher returns. Now, this is where I need to tell you what these things are because it changed my font to white on white. This is Petersburg, Texas, dryland cotton, planted May 4th, picture taken August 25th. You can still see the planter tracks in the field. There hadn't been enough rainfall even to wash away the planter tracks. This one here is... pre-irrigated only cotton at Shallow Water, Texas. It was planted May 4th with one pre-irrigation. And that picture, all these pictures are taken August 25th. Then we bump up to Petersburg, 9/10 of a bale per acre. Oh, and that last one wasn't harvested. It was abandoned. And this is subsurface drip that only has a 1.5 gallon a minute capacity, made 9/10 of a bale. And then we've got Petersburg, subsurface drip. Now we're up to about 2.5 gallon per minute per acre capacity. And you can start to see a lot better look on this field. This one made 1.5 bales per acre. Now we're getting here. This is 3.3 bales per acre, 4.1 gallon per minute per acre. So we made 3.3. Again, this is August 25th picture. And then finally, Sandhill, I think I got may have one more after this. 3.5 bales per acre, 4.5 gallons per minute. Yeah, and then here's the last one at Shallow Water, Texas. 3.95 bales per acre. These are all 2011. 6 gallon a minute per acre. And total water applied was 43 inches. Now, in defense of the 43 inches, 16 of that was put on just to get it up. Because we just couldn't get the water pushed up to the seed. After that, it was really fairly normal, about in line with the others, but the capacity there was 6 gallons a minute. So our study group that we had, 31 farm sites, and 17 of those were subsurface drip. Everything was on 8-inch centers, none of it was 40s. 13 center pivots, two of which were mid-elevation sprays, one low-elevation spray, 10 LEPA systems, and we also had one furrow irrigated system in that. This is one furrow irrigated system that we harvested, not the one you saw that was failed. So, gallon per minute, it's all ranged from 1.5 to 6 gallons a minute. So when we plot that out of yield against water applied, you can see this one that's way up here in the top, that's at 43 inches of water applied, and it made the highest yield. We would hope that it would. When we look at this with 90 cent a pound cotton and water applied at $9 an acre inch, this block right here represents kind of the most profit. Those are the systems that all had greater than 4 gallons per minute capacity. Again, this is 2011, so this is the extreme year. Long term, we can probably get the same results down to about 3 gallons a minute, but in an extreme year, 4 gallons a minute brought us returns at 90 cent cotton and $9 water of about, these are return above direct cost of about $400 an acre or more. Our net profit on those, that same block, were from $200 to $800 an acre net profit. That's over all costs, including the system costs. So again, that greater than 4 gallon a minute did us pretty well. All those ones that are down there in the losing money were all those mostly that were below 2.5 gallons a minute. So we decided to look at the same thing, what happens to our returns if we were to drop back down to lone cotton. In that case, not very many even make a return above direct cost, and none of them have a net profit. So very sensitive to a large drop. Now, that's a large drop in price. We use 90 cents. This is loan. If we were to increase the cost of the water from $9 to $15 an acre inch, it's probably a little more realistic looking forward to this next year. Our return above direct cost, that same group is still making a pretty good return. Their net profits, really only the ones that had a 4 gallon a minute and above capacity were the only ones that would return a net profit at $15 an acre inch for water. So again, you know, that extra capacity and being able to water timely really pays off there. So just to kind of get what does this mean, and Jim touched on a little bit there, but it's just kind of a little chart going through. You know, what is 1.5 gallon a minute per acre? Well, that's 187.5 gallons per minute on a 125-acre pivot. That would mean that in the season from April 15th to September 15th, if you turn the pump on, never shut it off, you could apply 12 inches during the whole period. Well, virtually, you know, that's pretty hard to do. You've got some maintenance. You've got some downtimes. You've got to stop things. That's the maximum amount of water you could put on. When you get down there to, you know, 500 gallons a minute, 4 gallon a minute per acre, you know, you could apply 0.2386 inches per day. So that gets into being able to do that high water treatment that Jim was talking about. You know, if you did turn it on and run it 24 hours a day, it'd put out 33 inches of water. So that starts getting us into that 20-something inches, you know, when you consider downtime and other things that you're probably not going to run. So one of the things, you know, that's gotten to be the common thing is that we look at is, well, I think this year, instead of spending any money on irrigation, I'm just going to dust some seed in and go. It's dry. Why waste my money? Well, you know, that worked pretty good in 2011, we have to admit. These are actual numbers from some dryland cotton that I had. $152 an acre return for putting seed out there and collecting an insurance check. 2012. We dropped from $1.23 insurance price to $93. Again, same field, same result. Well, almost same result. We did have a 24-pound insurance estimate on that. That was our appraisal for insurance, 24, kind of like Jim's 22 pounds. It looked about like that this year. Now, this year we had enough rain on this dry land that we actually spent a little money because we thought we might have something. We had a stand, so we put some yellows down. We actually spent a significant amount of seed. The $9 an acre is actually, this is Next Gen Roundup Ready Flex cotton seed. By the time we got our Monsanto technology fee rebate back and our seed drought program back, it wound up only costing us a net of $9 an acre. So sometimes when, you know, we think about that seed being so expensive, it's on dry land, you know, it's real expensive if you make 151 pounds. If you make a good yield or you don't make anything, you know, it's really not that bad. $62 an acre this year, pretty significant drop there. So again, if we look at it staying dry and it doesn't rain and we dust in seed, and it's so dry as it was in 2011 that we don't waste money on yellows either. Go out and put some seed. We're looking at $80 an acre for that. So, you know, how does that compare as an alternative to actually irrigating to make a profit? Well, even with a lower projected price, so here I've got 68 cents. I figure from most of the talk around, that's a fairly bearish number, although I know a lot of banks aren't using that high of a number, actually, but 68 cents, 1,500 pounds, 1,000 pounds of revenue, $378 beats $80 any day. So, you know, if we've got the capacity to do it, I mean, it's still showing with the cost structure, the price structure, even though it's less than what it's been, you know, it's not $1.23, we're talking 68 cents, it still pays off. So, in conclusion, in 2011, with virtually no subsoil moisture, rainfall during the growing season, 4 gallons a minute is what it took to make a profitable crop. Long term, it shows about 3 gallons a minute. Long term, year after year, is going to be the profitable level to irrigate at. Irrigation profitability, you know, I say it's more sensitive to lower cotton prices because I think it's more sensitive to lower cotton prices that are feasible. I mean, it's very possible we could go back to loan price cotton again. And as far as how high energy prices can go, you know, we can double energy prices, which would be, I think, pretty severe, and it would have less impact than if we go back to loan price on cotton. And expected 2013 indicates that we should still be able to have profitable cotton yields in this next year. So go ahead and work on those wells, get those pivots set up, get after it again. So that's all for my presentation. Anybody has any questions, we might have 1 minute No, we got like 5 minutes, I think. Yeah. Cotton price used in that is FAPRI baseline price, which for 2013 is 70.76 cents. Basic trend on the FAPRI baseline right now is drifting lower for the next 2 to 3 years, and then drifting slightly higher to the end of the 10-year period, ending up at about 71 cents. So, I mean, FAPRI baseline right now on cotton price is in about a 2-cent range over the whole 10-year period, between 71 and 68 cents. So. Oh, yeah. Yeah, the crop insurance, if you can't get the math right by looking at the slide, that's because that's got seed endorsement on it, too. At 11 cents a pound this last year, at 9 cents a pound in 2011. And my projection for 2013 was just 11 cents a pound again. So, Rob. Yeah, it is kind of mind-blowing that, well, you know, I've been told many times, you got to spend money to make money. It's, you know, as long as, you know, what were we taught? The first thing we were taught in Ag Eco 101, marginal cost equals marginal return. You know, as long as you're below that line, you know, every dollar you spend makes more money. And that's one of the things about on the Southern High Plains, with irrigation being our big limiting factor physiologically, another inch at the right time, as Jim showed, really pays off. You know, if they're put on at the right time. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.